What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast, taking in the U.S. Open here on Fox Sports 1. If you're listening to this on Friday, I'm at Pebble Beach. Looking forward to that, firing down, watching my guy Tiger Woods. Well, actually, he's teeing off really early in the morning, so you know, I don't know what time I'm going to get down there, but I'm fired up to get to Pebble. I've never played it, but I've been there a bunch. It was like a two-hour drive for me. I don't know if you're watching this tournament. It looks so badass on TV. It's hard to beat some of the sight lines and the views at Pebble Beach. It's as good as you get. It really is. Jordan Spieth just hit it into the water. That's a problem. Well, let's get into this week. Lot going on. We got tampering charges filed by the Patriots. You know, pop meets kettle. We'll dive into that. We have Earl Thomas made some comments that kind of interested me. Tom Pelissero said something that the Minnesota Vikings are doing about Kirk Cousins. We're going to dive into it all. But first, let's start with the Patriots. I think there's a reason that, you know, law enforcement uses criminals sometimes to gather information. You know, I know historically, like, they've used criminals that are already in jail to help them find out how other criminals think. And I'm not even saying, trust me, I've defended the Patriots. But when you do some shady stuff sometimes, you know what shady stuff looks like. I had for the first time in my life, now I've only really worked in business probably the last 3 or 4 years since I've left radio and kind of done stuff for myself. And I had something happen to me, I guess, quote unquote, with a startup where money wasn't paid. Some shady shit happened. And part of it was my own fault for not kind of calling it out early, for keep going along with it. But whatever. It was, I would have paid for that learning experience. I mean, I literally did because money did not come my way. So my services were actually, I might as well paid them because they made the money. I ended up not. But it was an incredible learning experience. And I think anyone that's quote-unquote been screwed over in a financial situation, it's why a lot of older people are very cynical about business, because they kind of know what it looks like when something weird's going on. It's why if you ever go to, like, someone, a high-level person with a company, you have a mentor in business, and you present, you know, an opportunity, they immediately go, I red flag that. I would not, I would not recommend doing that. Why? Because they know what something shady or just not going to work looks like. That doesn't mean they're always right, but they know what it looks like. Well, if you're going to send this guy, Jack Easterby, I think is his name, and I already have him red flagged because he's like a scout meets a personal life coach meets team chaplain. Anytime God's a huge part of your life, but you're also the guy like in charge of hiring and firing, but you're not like the GM, something weird's going on. And this guy, just I don't know much about him. He's a bald guy. I've just Google imaged him. Something weird. I don't quite understand what he does. And I've texted people around the Houston Texans. They're not exactly sure either. All I know is he's Bill O'Brien's now right-hand man. Well, he was part of what the Patriots were doing the last couple years. So the ring ceremony last Thursday night, he went there to go to the ring ceremony because he was part of the team. Now, a lot of people went, like Trent Brown is a Raider. He was there. So it's not unnormal for him to go. But one thing's clear. The very next day, let me repeat, the very next day, the Texans fired their general manager. And all reports so far have been, they're all in on, not Brian Gain, who was their GM, on Nick Caserio, the quote-unquote GM, like Belichick's right-hand guy. And it's clear something happened at that gathering at Robert Kraft's house that might not be kosher. That the Patriots, who better than anyone, right away knows, you know, something's not right here. Like, maybe, I don't know if Kraft has video. I don't know what's going on. But again, when you hire a criminal, they know what it looks like. So when you're doing this in Belichick and Kraft's backyard, let's call it what it is. Belichick's not a saint. I mean, he pushes the envelope on everything, on anything. So you send this guy who clearly was there on basically like a recon mission to find out, one, if Caserio would take the job and probably tell him what was going on. So really, Brian Gain's fate was sealed the moment that guy showed up at Robert Kraft's house. The moment Caserio would just tell him, like, hey man, I'm probably interested. And I don't necessarily blame the Patriots for filing tampering charges. Because to me, that's kind of bullshit. You know, it's one thing to go back channels, reach to the agent. It's another thing on a ring ceremony night at Robert Kraft's house to kind of be doing some backward stuff, especially when you were basically the Patriots, like, team chaplain. Again, like, once you become the team chaplain, you kind of got to be above board on other stuff. Now, I don't blame the Texans for wanting Nick Caserio. He's clearly highly viewed. He knows exactly the Patriot way. Bill O'Brien trusts him. And from what I've heard, one of the big reasons they got rid of Brian Gain, not because Bill O'Brien dislikes him, actually liked him. He was literally Bill O'Brien's hire. Because Bill O'Brien, he wants someone that's really good at that job. And he viewed Brian Gaines and his 17 months on the job as average to below. Just wasn't good enough. And if we know, if we've learned one thing for Bill, with Bill O'Brien over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years since he's been the head coach of the Houston Texans, once you're in his doghouse, you're dead to him. He will flip on you, you know, faster than, you know, a criminal in front of the feds. He'll sing like a canary if it means getting that guy out and getting the new guy in. And clearly, for being like this hard-ass old-school guy, he's got a little politician to him. Because he keeps, and I'm a Bill O'Brien fan. I think he gets more criticism in the media circles and probably in the fan bases than I think he does internally in the NFL. He's viewed as a pretty good coach. But he's got this backstabber, shady mentality. Like, that's not really arguable at this point. But one thing was clear, and I, you know, it's, a lot of people were saying, pot meets kettle, the Patriots file the tampering charges. Yeah, because they know what it looks like. And this bald-headed team chaplain, who's now like the pseudo-GM for the Houston Texans, went in on a recon mission to find out and steal the Patriots guy. Now, if I'm Caserio, maybe it's time to get away from Bill. But I'd be very hesitant if I'm Caserio leaving Bill Belichick for Bill O'Brien that will turn on you in a heartbeat and a team that, you know, is good on paper, but they still got some financial issues. I think everyone views Deshaun Watson as a really good player, but is he a superstar player? Like, is he just going to be some 10-year NFL starter that's leading your team to the playoffs every year? You could argue in the body of evidence we have, it's probably what it looks like, but you never know. So maybe he's just trying to get a raise out of the Patriots. I don't blame Caserio for talking. Like, the only person that cares about you is you. You should always look out for yourself. Belichick does. Kraft does. Josh McDaniels does. So I have zero ill will or judgment on Caserio. That's welcome to life. But Easterby, or however the hell you say his name, is going in on this recon mission. You go on a SEAL Team 6 mission with a bunch of other SEAL Team 6 members on the other side, like, you might get blasted. You might get caught, right? It's easy when we send SEAL Team 6 into, like, Afghanistan and they don't know we're coming. But if you send a SEAL Team 6 member into, like, a fortress that is being guarded by SEAL Team 6, even if you're the best SEAL Team 6 member, it's going to be hard to infiltrate that thing. So Belichick, like, you're not pulling a fast one on those guys. They're too smart. They've seen it all. They do shady shit. So I think the tampering charges, of all the BS tampering charges that get thrown out, and they happen in the NBA more than anything, right? Like, Magic Johnson mentions Paul George's name, tampering. Like, this is legitimate tampering. I think where there's smoke, there's fire here, and the Texans were caught red-handed. Okay, let's get into Kirk Cousins. I saw Tom Pelissero had a comment that the Minnesota Vikings are giving Kirk Cousins a lot of different looks, different defenses in practice. And my first response was just shake my head. You gave this guy $84 million. And when you pay a free agent, a veteran free agent in professional sports, whether it's basketball, football, or baseball, I'm not a hockey guy, but I imagine hockey's the same. You're already getting, like, the player is the player when you get him. This is who he is. You can't, like, when you draft someone, what's so powerful about the draft is, like, think about whatever you do. When you get an intern, you can mold them. You can have them think the way that your business wants them to think. You can help him out build good habits if he just has the most basic stuff. Well, when you hire someone that's 40 years old and has 15 years experience, you're basically getting not a finished product, but someone that has an idea of what they're doing. No different than when you get a 5 or 6 year veteran player. And Kirk Cousins was 6 years, I think 7 years in the league when they signed him. So you get a veteran player and you give him a ton of money. Like, I got news for you. He kind of is what he is. So you can give Cousins a million looks in practice. It's not going to change that much. Because the things that Kirk Cousins struggles with, and this is what they should have known when they signed him, are one, he's just physically limited. It was always the knock with Alex Smith. Like Alex Smith, who's a smarter guy than Kirk Cousins, seems like his teammates like him a little more, whatever, just the better version of Kirk Cousins, still had physical limitations. Was never going to be able to make throws that Favre, peak Brady, Rodgers have in the bag. He does not have that club in the bag. If those guys have a 3 and a 4 iron, his bag stopped at like a 6 iron. It doesn't mean because he doesn't know where to go with the ball or who's open or who's not open or what he wants to do with the football. It's because physically he can't do it. Cousins, very similar. Cousins is not a good athlete. So when the play breaks down, he can only do so much. And his arm is meh, better than Alex, but it's not great for NFL standards. So when you have a limited arm talent, there are going to be throws that if they're a split second off, you know, a guy like Mahomes is the best version, but I just think you can use a lot of younger players, that ball is there when you have a little more zip on the football. And here's the other knock on Cousins, is processing stuff, not in practice or not in the film room. Again, I would say by 3 or 4 years into the NFL, Cousins, between sitting and playing, had kind of seen it all. All the different defenses, all the different looks. Like, his downfall is he can see it and know it, but for whatever reason, from brain to arm to execution, it's just not there. Now, again, I sound like I'm crushing Kirk Cousins. I think he's a solid quarterback, somewhere between 10 to 15. But that's it. Like, his resume is his resume, right? He's going to throw some touchdowns. I got news for you. It's never been easier to throw touchdowns in the NFL for quarterbacks. But he has inopportune picks. He makes inopportune turnovers. And again, just back to his physical limitations, he was a fourth-round pick for a reason. Now, where you're drafted does not determine how successful you are, i.e. Tom Brady. But Tom Brady, once he overcame that, had an elite arm. Now, it's probably not quite as strong as it used to be, but he can make every throw at warp speed, right? Obviously, Rodgers, Mahomes, like the best version, but you don't need that. But you do need, like, there are things that just Drew Brees can't do that a big-arm quarterback can't. And sometimes that can get you in trouble. The difference is Drew Brees, for being a average arm, and again, when I say average arm, people think he just doesn't have a great NFL arm because he's insanely accurate, one, and his process, like his ability to grind the tape Monday through Saturday, the game plan, what he thinks the defense is going to do to him, and then put that all into his mind and then execute that into his body is a plus characteristic. Like, that's just not a plus characteristic for Kirk Cousins. So you can keep throwing him all these different looks, mess with him in practice, try to get him flustered. I don't think that's going to do much. And I think that is somewhat of an indictment that they were desperate because they thought they were a quarterback away. Now, I will not argue that Kirk Cousins is not a better player than Case Keenum. Like, that's not an opinion, that's a fact. He's a better player. But he's not that much better. But when you factor in the money, he got so much cash that then the pressure adds that part of the evaluation of Kirk Cousins is that how much you paid for him. If they had got Kirk Cousins for like $30 million guaranteed, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But they gave him $84 million. You know, $84 million. Like, part of why Instagram's so sweet for Facebook, I think that what they buy Instagram for, like $1 billion. I mean, it's now it feels like their cash cow. What would Instagram be worth now? 10 times what Facebook bought it for? Part of when you have a sweet, even when you draft a player, like, damn, you drafted this guy in the second round. The Pats drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round. The Raiders drafted Derek Carr in the second round. Part of their value is like, damn, Dak Prescott, you got him cheap. Russell Wilson, that's what's great is when you draft him low and then he becomes a really good player. Now, Kirk Cousins was drafted low in the fourth round. But then they just paid him like an elite player. And we all know he's not an elite player. There is so much pressure on Kirk Cousins this year. Because it's not really arguable if you just put a top 10 quarterback on that team. Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. Hell, if I gave him Jimmy Garoppolo, if I gave him Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, all these guys, they would win. They would be a lock playoff team. So I know their defense was hit or miss, and it's not all on Kirk Cousins, and it feels a little unfair because it feels like I'm shitting on him right now. I'm not even necessarily trying to, But I do think it's an indictment that they're trying to throw all these curveballs. Like, I'm sorry, he's going to be 31 this fall. I think when the football season starts, he's going to be 31 years old. Kind of is what he is, you know, because he's always kind of hung his hat. The way he became a starter was being a smart guy. He didn't wow anyone with, like, athletic ability or deep ball power. He was just super smart. He knew the playbook. Like, that's what he hangs his hat on, right? It's what he, if Mike Tyson ever in his prime just, you know what? He doesn't have that much power anymore. Like, he wasn't going to beat you with defense and ability to box like Floyd Mayweather. Like, he hung his hat on hitting you in the face and knocking you out. Like, no one ever called Chuck Liddell. You know what Chuck Liddell is? He's an elite grappler on the ground. No! If Chuck Liddell was going to beat you, Cal Poly alum, baby, he was going to hit you with a right in the chin, and you were going to go night-night. So the moment Chuck Liddell's right hook stopped being a plus attribute, he was screwed. His career ended. It's like the moment we start questioning, you know, I don't know if Cousins can quite handle the playbook, we're done. Because he ain't just going to freelance like Favre. You know, he's not just going to be able to make plays like Mahomes. He's not going to be able to run around like Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson. He better be the smartest guy on the field. I think the Minnesota Vikings, if you get true serum in them right now, if Mike Zimmer, a.k.a. the Meathead, a.k.a. I respect him, great defensive coach, he walked into my office right now, and I bet he like vodka, but I bet he likes whiskey or bourbon. So I went and grabbed him just a stiff bourbon or whiskey drink. I poured it about two drinks deep. He'd be like, you know, if we could do one thing over, we would not have signed Kirk Cousins to that contract. We regret that contract. They're already kind of showing you. Like, you don't need me to tell you that. You don't need him to tell you that. It's pretty clear through the rumors that are coming out there. It's not going to work out. Okay, let's get into my last item here. Earl Thomas. And Earl Thomas made a comment, and I'm not trying to take it out of context. I did not hear him say it. So I don't think he said this, like, with a negative connotation. I just think he just said it very matter-of-factly, very black and white. Here's what Earl Thomas said. I guess he was interviewed this week. It might have been Thursday as camp or mini camps were ending. Earl Thomas on the Ravens defense. This defense is very complex compared to what we did in Seattle, where all we did was cover three. And when I first read that, I was like, God, is he taking a shot at Pete? And then I just think he's saying that simply, we do a lot of different stuff here with Seattle. You knew exactly what we were doing, which is factually correct. And it just got me thinking. Because for the most part, I would say most NFL coaches believe that more complexity in an offense or defensive schemes is a good thing. It means you're out thinking the opponent. They don't know what's coming. You have an advantage. Just because at any moment you can go left, right, blitz, different coverages, run, pass, whatever, right? And I think Pete Carroll has proven, if I get people that fit my system, we're going to do the same exact thing every play, and it won't matter, we're still going to kick your ass. And I think this applies to, like, anything in life. Too often people try to, like, reinvent the wheel in a business, and someone DM'd me this a while back, and then I've looked into it, it's so true. Like, what most good companies call R&D is not research and development. It's rob and duplicate. And in most good businesses, you're not necessarily, you're innovating off something that's already there. R&D, rob and duplicate. And football's king of that, right? Football coaches are constantly stealing concepts, just like in any business. The difference in football is, like, I can just steal your play. And the good thing about it, if you're a football coach, you can steal it from college, you can steal it from high school, it doesn't really matter. If you see it and you like it, take it. But I think that I was looking back over the last 7 years and went, well, I'm interested to see. Like, the number one stat I look for in a defense is scoring defense. Because at the end of the day, yards per attempt, whatever. How many points do you give up? The entire goal of this thing we call football is to have more points, or just sports in general, is to have more points than the other team at the end of the game. So what is your scoring defense like? And I just went through Baltimore and Seattle, because Baltimore has consistently been one of the best defenses in the league. Now, they've done a lot of different stuff. They've also had a lot of different defensive coordinators over that period of time. Well, last year, 2018, Baltimore had one of the best defenses in the league. They had the number two overall scoring defense. Seattle, second worst year in the Pete Carroll tenure at 11. Baltimore was really good on defense. Now, they lost a lot of players from that defense, but last year they were awesome. Well, 2 years ago, Baltimore was 6th and Seattle was 13. So, last couple years, Seattle fell off for what, you know, a little bit. They also had a lot of injuries. They had a lot of turnover. But I think they had a 5-year run from 12 to 16 where they had 4 straight seasons where they were the number one scoring defense, where all they were doing was running cover 3. And then in 2016, they were 3rd. During that stretch, and this is when Ray Lewis was still on the team, they still had the end of Ed Reed, obviously Terrell Suggs, they had a lot of good players, C.J. Mosley. The Ravens, 12, 12, 6, 24, and 9. So pretty inconsistent. Now, the Seattle Seahawks had several Hall of Famers. I mean, Earl Thomas, Hall of Famer. Sherman, probably borderline Hall of Famer. Cam Chancellor, Hall of Really Good. Michael Bennett. I mean, they had some really, really good players. So you keep it pretty simple. But there's no disputing that simple worked in Seattle. You don't, like, if you throw 99 miles an hour, just throw the fastball. You don't need to overthink the room here. Now, you can't throw the fastball down the middle, but you don't need to, like, you don't need to throw a million breaking balls. Just throw the fastball. Just don't put it down the middle. Put it in different spots. You're going to get some strikeouts, right? If cover threes works, you don't need to run cover two, cover zero, blitz a bunch. I don't know. You don't need to be that complex because shit was working for Seattle. And guess what Pete Carroll did? He was able to get an environment that was conducive to just playing free, playing fast. And for four straight years, they had the number one scoring defense. And then the year they quote-unquote fell off in 16, they were 3rd. Like, think how consistent that is. And then even 2 years when they've lost all these players, Cam, Richard, now Earl, they were still top 15 in the league. And I would expect them to be a top 10 defense this year, scoring defense. Because that's something that clearly Pete Carroll puts an emphasis on, the franchise hangs their hat on. It's the identity of the team. And the identity of Baltimore Ravens, you would say, is defense too. But their scoring defense has been very hit or miss. So just complexity doesn't matter if you can't do it right. Like, I think when people see the Chiefs are a good example, they're very complex. And I think the Patriots over time have become very complex on offense. Well, I bet Andy would tell you, we got Alex Smith. He was comfortable doing a lot of these concepts because he did them in college. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes can do a little bit of everything because he saw what Alex was doing. He ran the spread offense in college. Then he's comfortable adapting to new, you know, NFL-type concepts. But he can be multiverse. Obviously, Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels are one of the most unique combos we've ever seen. But, you know, if you can just run the ball down someone's throat, when the Niners were humming under Harbaugh, they had one of the best offensive lines in the league. They had Staley. They had Upati. I think their center was Goodwin. They had Boone. And they had Davis was their offensive line. And they had Frank Gore. And they had Bruce Miller. And you know what they did? The majority of the games when they would take the lead, they'd run power down your throat. They'd run power till you tapped out and said uncle. Like, you didn't need to overthink the room. Do you know when they started overthinking the room and they tried to get this progressive NFL spread attack with Colin Kaepernick? Not running the ball, but throwing the football, going 4 and 5 wide, their offense fell apart. But when they just kept it simple and they ran it out of the pistol and they ran power, they dominated. They controlled the clock and they played defense. Like, and they kept it pretty simple. Keep it simple, stupid. You know, that worked, and it's worked for a lot of really good teams. And I think historically when teams have gotten trouble is when they've tried to get tricky. And I think Seattle is a great example. And again, I don't necessarily think Earl was taking a shot, unless he actually was. I didn't hear the audio. I'm just reading the quote. But I think one thing Pete Carroll should be very proud of is what we do works. What we do works. We play with a violent style. We play fast. And while we don't have the talent that we once did with all these guys gone, we still are going to be really good because we're going to do something and we're going to hang our hat on and we're going to master it. I think, you know, too often in life we try to do a million different things where when you can just hone into something, it's impossible not to improve. Where I think some of these, especially when you go around the NFL, first off, defense is really hard to play, right, in the NFL because the rules are not on your side. So when you try to, you know, run 18 different million concepts on defense, blitzes, coverages, you can outthink the room fast. Like, there's no outthinking the room on Seattle. Now, they may get penalized, they may have a player that's just not good enough, whatever, but they're not going to really be confused. because they just do one basic thing and they do it really, really well. So I think that is a compliment to Pete Carroll and a compliment to Seattle and should be viewed and something they should be very proud of. Okay, no Middlecoff mailbag this week, mainly because it's going to be a slow summer. I'm going to need some of your guys' questions. So fire up in the DMs, at John Middlecoff on Instagram. That's how I answer your questions. And I'll get to your questions in the upcoming weeks because everyone's on vacation, including kind of me, but the great part about having a podcast, you can do podcasts on vacations. There's not going to be much going on. I mean, literally the entire NFL is shut down at minimum for the next month. So we won't even have people reporting probably till July 20th on the earliest, since June 13th. And plus, it's about 5:40 right now, my time. And I got the Warriors game on in like 20 minutes, and I want to watch the golf. So enjoy your weekend. Happy Father's Day this Sunday. I guess you're probably listening to this on Friday or maybe Saturday. Hell, maybe on Father's Day. Tell your dad about my podcast. Get him listening too. But enjoy Father's Day for all the fathers out there. Keep crushing it. And I'll talk to y'all soon. Subscribe to all your friends. Tweet it out. Instagram it out. Do whatever you do. Adios. Peace. Have a good weekend.